The Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com for Tuesday, July 25th, 2017. My next guests are friends of mine, two terrific journalists, two great writers. We've got Gilad Atzmon, the great jazz saxophonist, the artist and author. And we'll also be joined in a minute. He's just dropped out, but he'll come back to us in a minute. The presenter of the politics show at BCFM and former BBC journalist Tony Gosling. But Gilad, welcome back to the programme. How are you? And both of them seem to have gone. Ah, the best laid plans of mice and men. Shall I try that again, shall I? I'll try that again. Let me try that again. I'm dialing them up again. Wonderful, isn't it? These are the things that used to have you with sleepless nights when you first started presenting. Gilad and Tony, welcome to the programme. Good evening. It's not happening, is it? I haven't a clue what's going on there. I think what I'm going to have to do is do it another way. Are you there, gentlemen? They're not. We're in the call, but we can't hear them for some reason. So we'll have to scrap the call and do it another way. And I have an idea how to do it as well. Right. Let me get rid of that music, because we've just heard that. And tell you what we'll do. We'll take another very quick break. When we come back, we'll have the guys on the line. Back in a minute.
Is your mind full of ideas, yet you struggle to put them down on paper? Characters with no home, unfinished concepts that you always wanted to finalise, yet lacked knowledge and drive to complete? The Creative Writing Course from Creative Imagings may be the long-awaited answer. Designed to help you finish your masterpiece with better language techniques, detailed study of the character, plotted suspense chain, and valuable information to get published. Don't delay your creation. Sign up today. Email Sue on nassusproductions@gmail.com.
Right, let's hope it works this time. I've tried to do it another way. Tony Gosling and Gilad Atzmon, welcome both to the programme. How are you?
Hi, Richie. Fine.
Thanks, Tony. I don't know what happened there, Tony, but we seem to have managed it anyway. Gilad, welcome. How are you?
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you loud and clear. Okay. Thanks, both of you, for joining me. I introduced you already. People I'm very proud to know. Terrific writers, commentators, and agitators, you could say. Tony Gosling and Gilad Atzmon. Tony, to you first. This is becoming a regular thing. What happened to David Icke and DavidIke.com today, ITV.com and Manchester Evening News pulling the stories under, I suppose, fear of libel and all that goes with that. It's happening all the time. You've had your own experiences, Tony, through the years. You, of course, being a member of the NUJ. What have you made of this today and what's going on around it?
Well, I mean, I've had an experience. It really started around about 2000, 2001 with a guy called Eric Lee, who ran a trade union website called Labour Start. Attacking me, really, saying that I'm anti-Semitic because I was linking to a one of David Irving's articles. Now, I just want to point out, I actually, you know, don't credit David Irving with very much at all, other than some of the things that he's dug out are interesting. And, you know, I find him, you know, a difficult, if not probably, it's probably not the wisest person to quote. But the thing is, he's dug out some material that nobody else has. And I did make it clear that I didn't agree with other things that he said, but this thing was interesting. Anyway, so that, you begin to get a kind of idea of how this works. It's guilt by association, contamination. By quoting somebody, you are supposedly agreeing with what they're saying and agreeing with, I suppose, what the implication is, everything they say, however wild. And I think the thing is, Irving looked into some very interesting stuff and he managed to dig out some of the archives, for example, to do with the death of General Sikorsky, the Polish leader during World War II, very suspicious death, which was connected with MI6 and Joseph Rettinger, who were people involved in the setting up of the Bilderberg Group in the 1950s. I think this is worth looking at. And he also had access to some of the archives over in Russia, which no one else had bothered to go and have a look at in the 1990s after Glasnost and, you know, in the Yeltsin years. So yeah, I stand by what I said, effectively, which was that this was worth looking at.
What happened, Tony? What happened to you then? What was the reaction?
Eric did is he circulated a memo all around to all various people I'd been in contact with, including lots and lots of people on his own trade union list, saying that I was not a person that anyone should have anything to do with. So, you know, I just basically put together. It's the sort of thing where you think to yourself, is it really worth? Do you really want to take this to court and challenge this in the courts? At the time, actually in 2001, I was living in a squat. I had about sort of £30 to my name, and there was no way that I was going to be able to do that. So I thought the best thing to do was to circulate a rebuttal, really. But of course, I could never reach as many people as he could. And effectively, this is how the mainstream media works with boycotts of various sorts, is they have a mass audience. And in order for you to reach that mass audience, they have to actually send any kind of rebuttal themselves. I would say from a professional journalistic point of view, actually what you should be doing is, if you want to use your organ of mass media to have a go at somebody, you should have the at least the discretion to call them up and put a quote from them in that article.
It's untenable. So it's untenable for you.
What you're doing is effectively providing some balance to what, you know, you're say, for example, a university bans a talk. We had Webster Tarpley banned by Bristol University a few years ago, for example. What they should be doing, if that's being then circulated, it's really simple. All you do is you say, well, the university's banned Webster Tarpley for these reasons. They think he's a conspiracy theorist. Basically, that was it. And then contact Tarpley and circulate his response to that. That is called journalism. It's called balance. And it's almost entirely lacking in the modern mainstream press.
Well, it's a point we made today. Gilad, just before Gilad comes in, it's a point we made today. I tweeted the journalist in question. I've never been arrogant about what it is I do. I am a journalist. You're a journalist. We came up, Tony, it was untenable. We were trained in a way that it was untenable not to phone davidicke.com today and say, listen, we've been contacted by the Northwest Friends of Israel saying this about you. But they didn't even do that. Gilad Atzmon, jazz saxophonist, writer, philosopher, welcome to the programme. None of this is any surprise to you, what we've been seeing today. Go ahead.
No, it's not surprising at all. What we see really in the last few weeks, and it is now extensive, but we see it for probably 10 or 15 years, what we see is an extensive witch hunt campaign. And I think that David Icke was very astute when he pointed out that those who are engaged in such campaigns of extensive book burning are basically fearful. And the next question to be asked is, what is it they are fearful of, or what is it that we know and they really want to deny or attempt to conceal or to silence? Now, for me, it is very, very interesting, because when the Wandering Who came out, they really went for me. They used their biggest cannon, Alan Dershowitz, on Fox News, and they denounced me that this is horrible, it's anti-Semitic, and so on and so on and so on. And how is it possible that all those big professors support Gilad Atzmon? And they were shocked to find out that not a single one withdrew. Quite the opposite, most of them actually stood up to my defense. What I see now is that they really avoid these tactics completely. What they do, they use the local political system or local government in an attempt to silence every possible discussion. So we will see local councillors, we will see local politicians subservient to their call. And this is exactly what I describe in my new book. It is called Being in Time, a Post-Political Manifesto. In the post-political condition, the politician is completely detached from us, the people. He or she are totally subservient to one sector in our society, and as it happens, this sector is actually a foreign government and for an interest of a foreign state. This is uniquely embarrassing. You know, it was exposed by Al Jazeera when it came to the labor, but it is something that we see all over, and it is quite effective unless we point at it. And this is what I am trying to do. And I think that this whole campaign is about to backfire. And I tell you why. At least in my case, they are so desperate that they are clearly determined to destroy my musical career. In the last 24 hours, they tried to cancel a few of my concerts. Now, this is not very easy because I have a lot of support here from jazz lovers, from music promoters that know that they are lying. They know that I'm not a racist. How can I be an anti-Semite if half of my band is Jewish? You know, how can I be a Holocaust denier if I'm playing regularly in Germany, in Berlin, with Bundestag members sitting in my audience? You know, nobody buys this nonsense. And it is going to backfire big time on them. And I'm actually looking forward. And I think that, as David said yesterday or 2 days ago in his clip, what we see is fear. And in fact, I defined it in The Wandering Goo. What we really see is a pre-traumatic stress disorder as opposed to post-traumatic stress. They are tormented by a delusional reality that they actually inflict upon themselves.
Tony, on that, on what Gilad is saying, just while we're on this particular theme, they've been tweeting the program, the Northwest Friends of Israel, and this is tragic, Tony, claiming that we have anti-Semites and Holocaust deniers on the program. I've said, while Gilad has been chatting there, I've said, well, you know, you could always come on. And pick up the Skype and come on in an atmosphere of discourse and, you know, mature debate. Gilad talked earlier on, Tony, about this being endemic right across politics, local politics. You see that in Bristol as well, right?
Well, look, the fact of the matter is they're afraid of that discourse. They don't want to go on the record talking to people who will take them out effectively, intellectually. And this is the sort of thing we saw, if you can remember, way back to sort of around about 2003, 2004. We heard Right Honourable Robin Cook, who at the time was the Foreign Secretary and who then resigned, on BBC Radio 4, morning after morning on the Today programme, ripping the US position over the Iraq invasion to shreds day after day. Then, of course, unfortunately, he died after that. But that's the sort of thing they simply do not want to do. I'm in a totally the same sort of position with what you might call the Blairite wing of the Labour Party here in Bristol. They simply will not come on the radio. Local MPs, Kerry McCarthy, who probably wouldn't want to be called a Blairite, but she was very anti Jeremy Corbyn during the campaign. The same with Thangam Debonair. And others, including the mayor as well. These people do not want to come on to discuss these things onto alternative media because they know they can go to the mainstream media and get an easy ride. So we're moving away from a mainstream press which is doing journalism and towards a mainstream press which is almost pure propaganda. Let me just give you a quick example, just in The Guardian the last couple of days, an article about vaccines, which is by Nicola Davis, the journalist there, saying that a small decline in the MMR vaccination rules could have a devastating effect on the actual those diseases. Now, this is effectively just a press release from the pharmaceutical industry. There's no countervailing position put. So that's where we're going. We're going towards a mainstream press which is just putting out the official line, the corporate line, on almost everything without even making an attempt to balance it.
Tony, let me ask you this before Gilad comes back in. So, Tony, when these groups contact a venue, So you have Gilad Atzmon, obviously very, very well-known saxophonist. He has a following. You have somebody like David Icke, sold a lot of books, very, very well-known. People make, you know, they make travel plans. They spend a lot of money sometimes to fly, to book hotels, to come and hear Gilad play or listen to David speak or hear Gilad speak. So these people get in touch with venues. What do you do, Tony? What are we supposed to do when these venues say, we're going to cancel the event?
You've got people who are running venues who are spineless.
Yeah.
I would say effectively what you should be doing is doing exactly what's happening outside the Al-Aqsa Mosque at the moment, which is you have your prayer meetings outside Al-Aqsa Mosque. You don't subject yourself to the totally unreasonable, illegal security checks, illegal occupation security checks that the Israelis are trying to impose on people. I would suggest that you either do your kind of speech using a megaphone out in the street. One thing you don't do is you don't give in to this. I mean, we did this in Bristol when Webster Tarpey came to speak a few years ago, and we were cancelled at the last minute by Bristol University. All we did is we found an alternative venue, which was very close by. It's a troublesome, it's irritating. But whatever you do, don't. In fact, what we did is we even stationed some people at the old venue to make sure that anyone that had not heard that about the moving had got a statement from us about the university, including a letter from the vice principal of the university with his one line reason, which was virtually nothing really about why he cancelled it. And then also we got publicity off the back of that. So I think in a way, what you have to try and do is turn these adversity and difficult situations to your own advantage.
There is a new tactic that is used here, and this is, we have to be very clear about it. It is very clear to everyone who is involved in this discussion that the people who are actually pushing for these cancellations are groups like Northwest Friends of Israel. And by the way, I send you information today, the leader or the deputy leader of this organization is Anthony Dennison, who is basically a gangster with a very problematic reputation, a person who was involved in the no pay car insurance scandal. Quite a dodgy character.
He was struck off.
Yeah, he was struck off as a lawyer and so on. Now, what is happening is that we are not fighting these people directly anymore. They would mount pressure on local government, on councillors, on venues, and we are left in a battle with people who are engaged in proxy war. However, I would totally agree with Tony that we should never give up. You know, when I have my last minute cancellation, the next thing that I'll do, I'll make sure that I give the talk either in the street or find an alternative venue. And after, I make it very clear to the people that were involved that they were mistaken, and I give them enough time to make their own investigation. I will expose them for what they did. And I think that this is a very powerful way around things. And I really like the analogy with Al-Aqsa. I make it very simple. I spoke with a few jazz musicians an hour ago. We saw what the Israelis did in Palestine. By now, we are all Palestinians. It is our elementary rights to speak our minds in Britain that is basically obliterated, and it is totally against our Athenian values as opposed to Jerusalemite values. They destroyed Palestine. Now they are insisting to destroy the British jazz scene. I think that they will find it slightly more difficult, and a lot because, as Tony said, we actually learn from the Palestinians. We won't let it happen. We will show them what resistance is.
I agree with Gilad, Tony, but what do you do when the government is proposing draconian new laws? an affront to freedom of speech, proposing basically to privatise the internet to go after hate speech, which could be, and I don't obviously agree with this, but they will say the things said by Gilad Atzmon about Jewish identity. Gilad is just a very clever speaker, and really deep down he's just a disgusting racist. We've got to stop that. How are we going to deal with that, Tony?
Well, I think we take them on intellectually and legally where necessary. We just got to expose the Zionist fundamentalists. I mean, because we've been hearing ever since 9/11, in fact, even before that in Bosnia as well, partly, about the whole Islamic fundamentalist agenda, supposedly. What we're not hearing about, and in order to deal with these situations, surely to start with, we've just got to educate people. We've got to educate ourselves and we've got to educate everyone as to what is Zionist fundamentalism. I came across a book a few years ago called Christian Zionism, Roadmap to Armageddon by Reverend Stephen Sizer, who he retired as a vicar back in August, and he was in the news last year because he'd been banned by the Church of England, I think by his vicar, no, sorry, by his bishop, in the Bishop of Guildford, from using any kind of social media, and also, incredibly for a vicar, saying anything about the Middle East. But as it turns out, what he's saying is explosive, and he's been censored as a result of it. His program makes Nostradamus look decidedly boring when he spells out what is going on in the Christian Zionism and in the Zionist fundamentalist world. That Zionists believe that they remain God's chosen people, and they have been ever since Old Testament times, and nobody else is. They also believe that there must be a final restoration of the Jews to the scriptural lands under any kind of situation. And by that, they mean the Zionists. Also, that Palestine belongs exclusively to the Zionists, including the Gaza and the West Bank. There's also their program where they believe that Jerusalem must be restored to Israel's final capital exclusively for the Zionists. And that the third temple must be built and consecrated with priests and sacrifices resuming, as well as an apocalyptic war with Islam breaking out with no prospect for peace. And this actually, the last one here is the clue, because there is not going to be any kind of sensible peace negotiation or peace process. All the time you've got these Zionist fundamentalists believing that God has said there will not be peace. They are not interested in peace because they believe that it's God ordained that there can't be. So these are the fundamentalists I think we really should be worrying about.
You can't.
And there is another thing that to add here. You know, you mentioned the anti-racism. Obviously, I see myself as an anti-racist. But yet the racism that bothers me more than anything else is actually Jewish racism, and not just Zionist Jewish racism. When it comes to Jewish politics, every political body that identifies as a Jewish political body is racially driven. So if it comes to the Jewish state, this is a racially oriented state. But when it comes to the Jewish anti-Zionist, they are also racially driven. And what we have to do is, when they really start to talk about racism, we have to make sure that we explain to them that they are actually projecting their own racist symptoms on the rest of us. The only political bodies that operate in this country that are racially oriented, as it happens, are the Jewish political institutions.
It's what
the same applies just very shortly to Israel. Israel defines itself as the Jewish state. Would we accept a country defines itself as a white state or as an Aryan state? Israel is the only country that defined itself as a one race state. Now, this is when they talk about racism, all we have to do is to put a mirror in front of their faces.
Show them their own literature. I have a question for both of you. I'm going to ask it to Tony first. You're probably not going to like it either of you, but I'm going to put it to you anyway. Look, I've been making programs like this for 20 years. Not like this. Mainstream programs, commercial programs originally. And some of the radio stations I was involved with, the tracking of audience interest and audience participation is very sophisticated. Tony will know all about this, having worked at the BBC, of course. I'm not suggesting, Gilla, that you don't know what I'm talking about, mate. Of course you do. Of course you do. The point I'm going to make is, when I've brought this up before, the first time I ever spoke with either of you was on radio in Spain, and we had pretty sophisticated software for tracking people. Here it goes. We're not going to like it. When we talk about this, when we talk about what the racist, Zionist, apartheid state of Israel is doing, not only in its own country, but outside its own country to its neighbours and everything else, do you know what happens? Tony Gosling knows what's coming. People switch off. They don't give a shit. Why do people not give a shit, Tony?
I think they do, actually.
Why do they switch
off,
Tony?
There are some who will switch off because it's too uncomfortable for them to hear about. They make these basic associations between any kind of criticism of the Israeli state and Nazism. It's a very, very difficult area, I think, to get into. If you're a mainstream journalist, I think it's fair to say, most of them wouldn't want to go anywhere near the subject. They realise it could potentially be career suicide. And as it has been, of course, if you look at what's happened to Ken Livingstone and the Labour Party's sanctioning of him, and in fact, the headlines going around the world about that incident were that Hitler said that, Ken Livingstone said Hitler was a Zionist. Ken Livingstone never said that, and that would be a stupid thing to say if he did, but he didn't say that. He said he was doing a deal with Zionism. And that is absolutely factually correct. And for saying this stuff, he's been massively sanctioned. In fact, you know, he's gone the way of my journalistic career, and hopefully not yet, but apparently maybe Gilad's jazz career, his political career. So, I mean, effectively, it's the Mandelson treatment. But when I was working in journalism in London, the rumours were going around that if Peter Mandelson could easily phone your boss up and get you sacked. So you had to kind of tiptoe around him. It's the Mandelson syndrome when it comes to these sorts of subjects. And I think also, if you look at what's happened to Al Jazeera, this is because of the sting operation they did back in January this year, where they exposed what none of the London press, with all their resources, with the millions and billions of pounds would do, which was that Shai Massot, the political attaché, had £1 million slush fund to get rid of any anti-Zionists and pro-Palestinians in the senior positions in the Labour Party. And also he was talking about taking out a government defence minister who was a little bit too pro-Palestinian. None of our media is doing this. And of course, that's what they really should be doing because they are scared to death of criticising Israel.
And you're absolutely right. And Gilad brought that point up. Gilad, you go along with that. Then I'm wrong. People are interested.
I actually think that people don't switch off at all. One of the things that we learned in the last election is that despite the huge slander and smear campaign against Jeremy Corbyn, in terms of popularity, is certainly way more popular than any politician in this country. Not that I'm a Trump supporter, but despite the huge slander and smear campaign against Donald Trump being an anti-Semite, as we know, he's actually the first Jewish president. The vast majority, not the vast majority, but he was elected to be the president of the United States, and they was voted a lot because he was clever. He was clever enough to navigate or to drive this sentiments of anti-Jewish feeling in his favor. This is at least what the Jewish institution argued all the time. So it's not Gilad Atzmon saying it. You know, they call it dog whistling and so on and so on. So actually, when it comes to the people out there, they clearly sense a fatigue. Now, the Jewish fear of anti-Semitism is to a certain extent, I mean, the Jewish fears of those institutions that attempt to cancel David's talks and my concert and so on and so on. Their fear of anti-Semitism is again driven by the acknowledgement that they are involved in a very, very dirty game, and they are bringing animosity, invoking animosity towards their own people. Now, I think that this is a tragic situation because a lot of Jews, and I would allow myself to say the vast majority of Jews, have nothing to do with it. We are talking about very small operations, largely funded by Israel or sent by Israel, like the case of Shai Masot that Tony just mentioned, that was exposed by Al Jazeera. The vast majority of British Jews may find themselves in a very awkward situation and they have nothing to do with it. And I actually wouldn't even ask them to take a stand, because if I asked them to do that, I would ask them to operate politically as Jews. And this is the last thing that I want to see. So it is a very, very awkward situation, very irresponsible. But the most devastating thing, it is actually a reminiscent, or it should remind us, the situation in Europe in the 30s. In the 30s, it was again very few Jewish oligarchs, Mammonites, people who were highly involved in mounting pressure on political bodies in Germany that invoked such huge Jewish hatred. And I think the Jews should be the first to know how dangerous is this game. It's really, really tragic that we see this story repeating itself. I'm so sorry that I have to mention it, but this is my duty as a writer.
Tony.
Well, I'm reminded of actually a lot of Edwin Black's work. He's the author of IBM and the Holocaust. He's also author of a book about the transfer agreement, yeah, which was what Ken Levinson was referring to, a bit of historical fact. And one of the things that's really not come out in the discussion about that is the fact that it broke the Jewish boycott of Nazi Germany. You know, this is why Livingston is pointing to it as an important historical incident where Zionism actually got in the way of things. There was a boycott of Nazi Germany by Jews right across the world, and the Zionists did a deal with Hitler. So they definitely deserve some criticism for that. I mean, you know, obviously they're not Nazis, and would be a stupid inference to make, but it was an important juncture in history. We've really got to look at these sorts of things without any kind of fear or favour, as we have got to look at the collusion of IBM, a big American corporation,
yes,
in the actual Holocaust itself. You know, these are the things we've really got to actually look at. And there seems to be no real stomach for this amongst much of the press. Let me also say about the press generally, is I think it's become the Schwerpunkt of the attack, which is what Hitler's generals would be calling any kind of, you know, the number one spearhead, the spearhead of the attack. Because when it comes to these illegal wars that have been happening, Iraq, etc., Libya, in almost every single case, in fact, if you go back to World War II, it was the same in those days with the New York Times making excuses for Hitler's invasion of Poland in 1939, is that the mainstream press is doing the groundwork for the attack on politicians, bouncing them into war almost every single time. So these people really need to be dealt with. We've got to somehow democratize and get journalism back into our mainstream press, or they will take us into another war. I would suggest probably sparked off by something in the Middle East or Ukraine or one of these other flashpoints, possibly North Korea.
Final question then, final question, because we are rapidly running out of time. Gilad, I know you want to come back on that, but final question to both of you, and if you can keep it to about 90 seconds each. What, Tony, and that's in no way to criticise you guys, I'm delighted that you're on, I'm delighted that you're expanding on what we talked about in the first hour. That's the beauty of programmes like this, as opposed to the mainstream. We have the time and, you know, we have the space to have these discussions. So let's ask this question then. As the media is being concentrated continuously, this isn't something that happened, you know, 10 years ago and stopped. It's continuing. We talk about six major corporations. I spent about a half an hour on a program recently trying to educate some of our listeners about who really owns the press in this country. So as, and Tony knows this, and you know this, Gilad, as we don't have, you know, local-run commercial radio stations so much anymore, we do have community stations, and thank God some of them have programs like Tony Gosling's program on them. But by and large, we're losing all of this. So how do we stop that then? How do we counteract the narrative of the mainstream media, which allows, you know, horrendous pseudo-intellectual morons like the Northwest Friends of Israel to go around getting David Icke's event cancelled, impeding Gilad Arslan. How do we do it, Gilad? How do we stop the press?
If you don't mind, I would like to address it. The one thing that I try to do, and this is probably why people are so desperate to silence me, I try to tell Europeans, Americans, Westerners, look at the origin of your own culture. We see a dispute between Athens, the city of truth, the city of philosophy, the birthplace of science, and Jerusalem. Jerusalem, the city of commandments, the city of revelation, the city that teaches you what is right and who is wrong without you having to think about it. Everything good that we have in our society comes from Athens. Tolerance, intellectual exchange, philosophy, science, music, everything slightly problematic comes from Jerusalem. Obedience, mitzvot, commandments. If we want to save our society, we have to look for Athens once again. If you want to look for Athens, the first thing that we have to do is to identify who are the bodies that prevents us from doing so. At the moment, I'm sorry to say it, it's the Guardian of Judea, it's the BBC, it's the mainstream media, and all of that happens for a reason, because those mainstream medias are dominated by Mammonism, by corporates, and this is where we have to fight. The good news and is that when you look at the political shift in the world in the last 2-3 years, whether it's Brexit or whether it is Trump or whether it is the revolution that we saw in France and even in Israel in the Labour Party, you know, I can get into details if you want, but probably we don't have time for that. We can see that, and Corbyn obviously in this country, we can see that people are extremely tired. They are extremely tired of the mainstream media. And this is actually a lot because of us, because we deliver an alternative humanist version of reality. I'm actually very optimistic. And the fact that they are fighting us, desperately trying to silence us, is a very, very good news.
Tony, 2 minutes to you. Go ahead.
Look, one of the things that really enervates me is the youth. I think we've seen an amazing, actually, with the Corbynistas and the people registering to vote, starting to actually get engaged again. And that, to me, is really important. The other thing a lot of young people don't do is they just don't watch television. They get most of their information from their friends on social media, and that is really where they get the news. That's what they trust. They are absolutely not going to have the wool pulled over their eyes. They do understand that there's something like a kind of, whatever you want to call it, new world order, mind control, propaganda system out there, and that it's an insurgent system they've got to deal with. A lot of youngsters, chatting to a lot of youngsters, they really understand this. They really get this. And so I don't think it's all doom and gloom at all. I think as we go on in the next few years, we will see a resurgence of some sort of proper government, unless there's some kind of absolute dictatorship, totalitarian system brought in. You know, for whatever reason, then I think the natural evolution at the moment is getting better towards the stage where we can start rolling back privatization, we can start rolling back the secret state, and people will then again start to flourish. One of the things I saw in Moscow a couple of years ago, the youngsters are all positive. They've got good job prospects, they're getting decent pay, they've got a lovely environment, and they think the world's their oyster. I'd like to see that spread from Moscow over to the Western world as well.
Over to here, Bilderberg.org, to find out more about Tony. Yeah. Listen to his excellent program on BCFM, the politics show. Gilad Atman's latest book, Being in Time, is outstanding. Can't recommend it highly enough. Got a copy of it here. Go to gilad.co.uk. Gentlemen, thanks for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Great to be with you. Bye-bye. Oh,
cheers, Richie.
Bye-bye.
Bye for now. The great Tony Gosling and Gilad Arzman live on the line on Tuesday's edition of the Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com.